Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Season 1, a podcast where two best friends watch, review, and recommend TV shows that only aired for a single season. My name is Presley.
And my name is perpetually making this podcast late.
It's a weird name, perpetually making this podcast late.
Yeah, it's actually Andrew. I lied.
Yeah, Andrew, I was going to start by demanding you give our audience an apology, and so this is me throwing that gauntlet.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. You know, life is crazy and busy. I made the mistake of having an anniversary and a birthday on the same weekend. Sorry about that.
Yeah, how dare then, you?
You know, life is just literally nonstop. So
yeah,
super cool.
You don't actually have to apologize. It's okay. I'm just crushed under the weight of the shows and the sadness of having to wait to discuss them, because sometimes I'm really eager and sometimes I really want to avoid it at all costs. And I wonder if you have any predictions for how I'm feeling about this one.
Well, I was gonna ask how eager you were to have this conversation, but then you like put the other side of the spectrum on like dreading the conversation. And so then I feel like if I ask you and you give me an answer, then I know what you kind of think already. I'm gonna guess that you thought this show was bad.
Okay. I don't want to confirm or deny to your point that you just made. Like if I show my hand too early, I've lost the poker game.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm not going to tell you what I thought. What do you think? What do you think? Do you think I'm like chomping at the bit to talk about this?
No, I think you hated the show.
Okay.
And I think Leanna probably really liked it.
She didn't watch most of it.
Okay.
So we don't know.
She often watch, for context for our listeners, she's been regularly watching most of the shows that Andrew partakes in. So it was a fair guess to think that she might have an opinion about this one.
Yeah. We live together and we have about the exact same amount of time to watch TV. So unfortunately, our TV time becomes the TV time from the podcast.
Yeah. Poor Leanna.
Yes. We all
She may or may not be laughing in the background at that comment. But she puts up with us, which is a good thing. Mostly good for you.
Yeah. It's great.
So I think we've babbled on about this, and I think it shows the way that we're feeling maybe more than we hope it does. But I think our listeners are ready for the synopsis, unless we have other thoughts to share beforehand.
Yeah, sounds good. City of Fire is an Apple TV Plus American crime drama based on the novel of the same name. Based in 2004 New York City, City on Fire follows Charlie, played by Wyatt Olef, detectives, and the Hamilton Sweeney family after Sam, played by Chase Sui Wonders, is shot in Central Park on July 4th. An underground music scene, a wealthy real estate family, and a mysterious slew of citywide fires are all connected by Sam, who's friends with a band in the underground music scene, had an affair with the husband of the Hamilton Sweeney family. Charlie gets swept up in rebellion against gentrification in New York City, while Regan and Will Hamilton Sweeney fight to save their company from an outsider pulling strings to steal the company away from their family. Charlie makes friends with Sam's friends, the band Ex Post Facto. The band is led by pyromaniac Nikki Chaos and is responsible for the many fires and bombings that end up taking down multiple buildings around New York. Amory Gold is plotting to take over the real estate empire by any means necessary and actually has resorted to funding Nikki and his friends' lifestyles and hiring them to burn down these buildings in order to purchase the buildings at a lower cost, while framing Bill Hamilton Sweeney, the owner of the company, and Regan and Will's father, for financial crimes. Detectives diligently search for answers as Sam hangs on by a thread in critical care, ultimately discovering Amory is at the head of the takeover, and that Amory is behind all of the fires. Charlie defuses a bomb to save a city block in New York City, finds that the culprits of the shooting are Sewer Girl, yes, Sewer Girl, and Soul, and rushes to Sam in the hospital during a citywide blackout to find her awake at the end of the series. And you heard about 1% of the stuff that happens in this show.
Yeah.
From a very, very long
synopsis. As is true of a lot of our synopses, I feel like
maybe
a core theme that we can pull out from this podcast, and this is not true of all the shows we watch, but this is certainly true of this show, our previous show, Constellation. I think even our last couple of shows have fallen to this syndrome of being too complicated for their own good.
Correct.
Where there's too much going on, too many characters to keep track of, and none of it being revealed until like the penultimate or ultimate episode.
Yeah.
Which I think is a really good way to stop people from being hooked early on.
Yes.
Like, and I think that the show suffers from that because it's not particularly compelling other than the first episode. Like, the first episode had some stuff to hook me in, but it's too spread out and you don't understand the connections of these people until way too far down the line as to make it more frustrating than interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, there's a lot of different threads going on here. It's almost got kind of like a Crash or like a Valentine's Day, you know, those two movies, kind of like how everything's all combined or connected and we're like trying to figure out how it all works and everything,
right.
Except this one is like super obvious and they tell you right away and everything in the show is predictable.
Yeah, there's a couple things that took me off guard, but not in ways that I would like think are interesting or fun, right? Like, and they all provoke too many questions for me to really like care. Like, here's a great example, right? So the main character, Charlie is what everyone calls him. His name's Charles, but he gets swept up with Nikki Chaos and the band and the people that are in Sam's orbit trying to kind of understand what's going on. But none of the things that he does or like 1% of the things he does revolve around actually trying to solve the crime in terms of like what narratively makes sense. And 99% of it revolves around just hanging out with this group of kind of miscreants for no reason and
blowing up
them
New York
like
buildings and like, them and,
right. He just becomes like an anarchist, but like an apprehensive anarchist for like a couple of days while he's wanted, because like someone reported that he was at the crime scene, 'cause he helped, like he was one of the people that saw Sam in the park when she was shot. And he just kind of fled because he was so in shock. Like, he absolutely didn't do it. He has no motive. Like, there's no reason for it. Like, we know 100% that it was not his fault. Or we know 99% that he didn't do it. It wouldn't make sense for him to do it from everything we see. Yeah. And so he's, like, wanted for murder, basically, or for attempted murder. And so he's basically a fugitive. But instead of, like, going home and helping his mom kind of deal with this and, like, just waiting for the police to actually solve the murder, which would have happened anyway... Not a murder, attempted murder. I keep thinking that she died, but she didn't. It's just ridiculous. Like, it's one thing to hide from the cops, it's another thing to join like an anarchist cell. You know, it's like two versions of a different extreme, I think.
It felt very much like an over-dramatized like series of these events. Like, don't get me wrong. Of course, like if someone got shot because something, you know, some secret is going to get out and is going to destroy the family or this or that, or, you know, whatever, like that kind of thing happens. But like how it's all connected and how like Charlie finds Sam and then becomes like this like anarchist fighting against gentrification in New York, but just because he's like around her friends and I don't know. It just all felt very like over dramatized.
And it makes
I don't really know the point I'm trying to say. Just
no, I know what you're saying, because like if you even add in one extra nugget of information that shades the whole thing differently, Charlie's dad died in 9/11. He was in the North Tower.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And the show opens with him in therapy discussing like he's like grief counseling. Right.
Yeah.
And so the idea that then he amidst a new grief of this person who he has told us that he is in love with, who really transformed his world in a positive way, going into a coma and being shot in the head and maybe never recovering, could be quite traumatic. The odds then that he would go and help who are essentially anarchists, I'm just going to call them that even if they wouldn't claim that themselves, and help them subsequently blow up even abandoned buildings is completely incongruent with the idea of somebody whose father had recently been killed in a terror attack. Yeah. Like it literally goes completely against the grain of a person. And like in that scenario, you could believe somebody had no serious understanding or deeper resonance with the attacks of 9/11 would do that. But for him to do it really resonates weirdly.
Yeah, that's a good point. And especially resonates weirdly because of just how distraught he is when his father is brought up. Like, you mentioned grief counseling. You know, people go through grief counseling if they just have, like, a regular relative or a friend or something that passes, right? Yeah. And they just, they want to get help moving through it, even if they're not really, 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 really heavily struggling with it. Charlie is one of those people in the latter camp. He is really having a hard time with his father's passing.
Yep.
To the point where, like you said, it totally is weird that he would just all of a sudden be like, "Oh yeah, let me basically be like a domestic terrorist," and like
yeah, even buying into the whole ideology, like even a little bit, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Like, you know, I think, you know, there's obviously something to be said about like fighting against gentrification in certain areas and whatnot, but Even as Supergirl tells them, it's like basically not that, and they're just
they kind of just reveal that Nikki McKay was it?
Nikki was Chaos.
Nikki Chaos. His last name is McKay. That's why I got confused.
Yeah.
But we discover that he literally is just a pyromaniac, right? Like separate from any belief system he may have about what he is doing as a righteous cause. Like ultimately, he just likes to blow shit up and or light shit on fire.
He likes to blow shit up, but he's got some charisma and he's got to convince these people that they're like to basically do his bidding and to help him blow shit up. And so he comes up with this whole like savior of New York, like underground savior of New York City, messiah bullshit thing that everybody buys into. Not everybody, you know, the band, his friends, whoever,
the people
buy into, right? The people around them.
I'm going to draw an interesting comparison, and I want to know if you felt this way too. But whenever I watched any of the greater band-related anarchist scenes, I was thrown back into another show that we have watched on this podcast. And do you know what that show could be?
National Treasure.
God, I wish. That was so much better. No, it's The Idol, one of the infamous horrible shows that we ever watched. Because there's so many like through lines of this like weird cultish behavior that forms around the personality of this band leader, Nikki Chaos, and like the adamance of everybody around him doing whatever he says implicitly. And even his main kind of hench person, I'm going to call him, I don't remember the guy's name, but he's like a
Soul.
Really built. Yeah.
S-O-L, Soul, yeah.
Yeah, Soul, the really big dude. He literally reminds me of... who's an idol? What's the singer's name?
The Weeknd.
Like he just reminds me of him because they kind of have like a similar tone and gruff persona in the both of the shows.
Yeah,
and series, so I kept being like thrown back into that, and I'm like, this has those same problems that that show had, where it's really aimless and not well defined as to why everybody cares about what he's saying, because it's not like we listen to the espoused virtues; they're kind of just implicit in what's happening. It's not like we listen for 5 minutes in a monologue about all the great things that they're trying to do by blowing shit up. They're just like, we're gonna burn it all down and then
we're
rise
fight.
From the ass. It's not it's
we're gonna
there's
fight
no
back
discourse.
He quotes like a classics, you know, an old piece of literature.
Correct.
Or philosophy or something, and is like, we're gonna fight back and we're gonna take it back, and then
but not in a meaningful
Yeah
credible way, just in a like, I mean, I guess that is what cult leaders do, but usually they have a greater motive or work to inspire, literally inspire people to follow them. And this didn't really have that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we just didn't have any reason to believe that this was a thing. We didn't have any reason to really buy in and like sign on it, you know? It was just this random group of people. They're just doing this stuff. They have no motivation. And they're just there. And then Charlie just kind of,
well, and I guess we
it.
Learn through the grapevine that they are motivated by this board member of this powerful real estate family.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean,
but I'm still agreeing with you that that isn't clear from their virtues.
Right, exactly. I'm speaking of like the virtues of the reason why that their movement exists.
Yeah,
is the thing that we really don't believe in. And of course, we find out that Amory is like this slippery snake that weaseled his way into the Hamilton Sweeney family's real estate company, by marriage of his sister to Bill Senior, William Senior,
the patriarch of the family.
The patriarch of the family. He is the one who actually is hiring Nikki Chaos and the group, both paying them to set things on these buildings on fire, as well as paying their rent, paying their bills, making sure that their lifestyle is good to go, and that they don't have to want for anything. He's paying them to do all of this and burn these buildings so he can buy real estate at a super cheap cost, because he's going for a blight decree?
Yeah, blight decree.
A blight decree to basically like get, I don't know the ins and outs of it. I'm not a real estate guy. I'm not a government guy. But basically try to like build a neighborhood and like trying to gentrify an entire neighborhood.
Yeah, if you can say that enough like, of a certain square block area is no longer providing for the city in any meaningful way.
Yes.
It's all abandoned buildings and or unlived, unused housing space, like whatever it is, right? Even if potentially unhoused people are living there or people are running like illegal operations, you can basically like get an easement from the government, and the government, you can like seize that land at like pennies on the dollar.
Perfect.
Because you're agreeing to take care of it by like not only, you're agreeing to pay for the renovation and destruction and rebuilding and guaranteeing a certain things to government for way, way, way cheaper. Which also ends up by the proxy turning it into a gentrification effort, because a lot of those places are the much poorer, less supported by the government areas,
right,
which results in a lot of people being forced out of homes that their individual home might be good, but they're within the bounds of that blight decree.
Right.
But real estate lesson.
Yeah. Thank you. And this is how, this is how like mafias and thugs and things like that, they mentioned that in the show.
Yep.
That's how, mafias and these places get such a stronghold on certain neighborhoods and certain areas, is through tactics like this. So anyways, Amory is going for this. He's been hiring Nikki Chaos and the group to do all the fires and get all the buildings, to purchase all the buildings and everything. Man, this show was a little messy.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a bit messy. I mean, it's just, everything's connected. There's multiple connections. Like, Will's basically connected with everybody, but mm-hmm. then Sam also is. I feel like we almost had like three different shows happening at the same time.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, you have Charlie dealing with, or you have Sam's attempted murder, Sam's attack, and the investigation going on.
Yep.
And then her close friend, lover, I mean, they loved each other. They just, Charlie admitted it and knew it. Sam struggled with being able to like accept that she deserves something like that. But you have this like this show where it's a detective show. It's a crime series,
We love a crime procedural on season one.
Yeah, a crime procedural. It's a whodunit, right?
Yep.
So you have the whodunit, and then you have the, this may be a little bit wrong, succession style, who's going to take over the company, who wants the company. There's someone who's, infiltrated the company and trying to turn it upside down to take it for themselves. And then you have this, like, anarchist, like, grungy, underground, like, Fight Club-esque sort of show going on. Yeah. You know, loosely Fight Club-esque. No, right? I'm not trying to draw an exact parallel. But.
No, but I think the point you're making is like thematically they're very different because one is like in the penthouses, in the luxurious estates of Long Island. One is in like the grungy, decrepit, falling apart, and one's like in the police station and in flashback. Yep. Like it's very three themed very differently. Yep. Storylines that are all converging, like they do intersect in ways that are very distinguishable, but I agree with you, it does feel like you're watching three different shows sometimes because of the way that they intersect.
And that's not to say that they don't feel connected, because they truly are, and they do a good enough job connecting them in a strong way, and actually it's sort of a like clever way, even though it was fairly predictable. Like I honestly, there were so many of the things that happened in this show that I was like, as it was, before it even came up, I was like, this person was doing this. This person did this. This
person it's very, this. Like, that is maybe my biggest gripe of the show is its predictability.
Same. It was just too easy to be like, oh, I could have written this. Like, people say that when they like can anticipate a joke or something or whatever in a show. I could anticipate this almost this entire show, and transparently, I'm not very good at that. Like, I feel like there's frequently times where we have conversations on this pod where, you know, I was like, oh, I didn't see that coming. And you're like, oh, that was like the most obvious thing that anyone could have thought was going to be the result of this.
It's my blessing and a curse, because I was having this conversation with our friend of the show, Annie, about a book we were both reading. And before I was finishing, I was giving her my thoughts about what was going to happen and my little headcanons or my little, oh, I could see this happening, or that's kind of outlandish. And then like, I'm not right like 85-90% of the time in a lot of cases. And I think like you're saying, like when you do it, you're less of a predictive machine than I am when we watch shows. Yeah. You can kind of just luxuriate in whatever's happening. Me, like I can't stop myself from doing that. Like I said, blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
Because I wish sometimes I could just sit and enjoy something.
Yeah. So my point is like it's a pretty I don't know if it's a pretty predictable story when I can pretty much piece the whole thing together about halfway through. Because I'm not the type who's really that type of person who's like seeing, you know, I just kind of take it as is, right? I'm just watching it, I'm just letting it happen. I might have ideas, I might have theories, but I'm not like, yeah, this is gonna happen, you know?
Yeah, there was only like two surprises in that vein for me, and that was that there was the first shot of the two shots that we know were towards Sam when she was shot mm-hmm. by Supergirl.
Yes,
That was a surprise. I was like, I knew she was involved, but I didn't think she would helped. But
I knew she was pretty manipulated by them.
Yeah,
but I didn't anticipate her to have like taken.
Yeah, exactly, and that's like a subtle thing in the grander. It's not like a big like crazy, right? And then the other thing that surprised me was the help and lucidity and support that they got from their father, the patriarch of the, or, you know, I don't know how to say it. Maybe you can summarize it, but the fact that he basically escapes his security detail, because he's being like investigated by the IRS, and it actually ends up helping his two estranged children to not only solve this murder, but kind of regain control of his company from Amory. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's, I thought he was just going to be like there in the background as like this kind of senile old dude. And then he's actually extremely helpful.
Yeah. He's like obviously going through, he either has like dementia, Alzheimer's or something. So yeah,
they talk about that. He's been at a facility helping him with some condition.
So he's in and out of like you said, lucidity. So he's every now and then he's talking about, you know, Will's something from 15, 20 years ago, his swim meet. And Will and Will Sr. haven't spoken in 15 years. They haven't seen each other in 15 years because Will Jr. ran away. He was an adult, right? He wasn't actually like a teenage runaway or anything, but he made a choice to distance himself from the family.
Yeah, after he found out that Amory essentially helped somebody that he knew rape his sister. Like, and then everyone seemed to be okay with that, and he got a seat on the board, and he's like, I don't think that that's right in any way, shape, or form. And he is absolutely correct.
Oh, yeah. He was absolutely correct to voice that concern or bring that up and like try to bring that to light. And he was right to kind of walk away from it. But
also was a artist and music star and heroin addict, which, you know, makes it harder to always see his right and wrong side of things.
Yeah.
He was actually my favorite character, but we can,
he was mine as well. Yeah. Anyway, so you have, sidetrack.
Yeah. That was
Bill. You have Bill going in and out of kind of like lucidity and understanding where he is, what time it is, you know, all that kind of thing. And then he comes in and saves the day and he's like, you mean this paperwork?
Yeah. Right.
It's like the smoking gun.
Yep.
For the whole entire case against Amory, to save the company, it's just like sitting in his hands and he's like, yeah, I have it right here.
Which is very convenient, but it also speaks to like, he is a clever businessman who does understand these things in spite of the people around him seemingly trying to shield him from it. Again, it one of those few times that the show did surprise me, right?
Yeah,
like I got to give it credit there.
Yeah. It was hard to fault them for writing it that way because I mean, you don't have like basically this massive successful real estate empire without being a fairly clever person and businessman.
Yep.
And sometimes when people are struggling with like a disease that affects memory, that's exactly how it works.
Yeah, sometimes they're
one moment they're a different person.
And we also don't see enough of him to really know like all of those ins and outs, obviously. But
correct.
Like he's shown in the background a lot being babied and guarded by everyone, of being kind of yes men to him a little bit. And so you
two or three lawyers and a personal assistant.
You just kind of assume from the tone, it's like, oh, he's probably just like not totally there. So they're trying to help him or whatever. So I don't know. The weakest part, in my opinion, is Mercer's connection to everything. Mercer is William's boyfriend. Who is the person that finds Sam in the park. He is leaving a party that William refuses to go to and discovers Sam kind of, you know, seeking help in the park. And then he's thought to be a suspect because he's wearing Will's jacket where they find, you know, cocaine or heroin or something in it. And so he's brought in as a suspect. He's also black and everybody else is white. And so there's kind of a racial element to motive. And this is, again, in 2004 when like Stop and Frisk was really a big in the kind of, like, so there's a lot of things there. But like other than his involvement kind of in the first episode or two where he's suspected there, his like connection to everything really falls away really quickly. And I'm like, why is he kind of a focal character when it really doesn't matter that he's in the story? I'm not saying you couldn't written it differently to include him more in the story or make him more important, but it was just odd to me that he kind of is one of those like core eight or nine people that are really important when it's tenuous at best. So
yeah, I agree. Mercer's connection to it all is very much like he's the introductory character that like escorts us. He like kind of gives us the tour of the landscape that we're working in.
I guess he also knows a lot of the varying factional people, right? Like he can connect William and Regan back together, who are siblings, but they've been estranged for these 15 years.
He just, but I'm agreeing with you. Like he just kind of like, he's the tour guide that gives you like a quick rundown of what's happening and like kind of gets you caught up to where we're at in time. And then he's just like, okay, bye. And like fades off into the distance. And now
but
you're
also
like exploring.
Like keeps showing up in like every other scene.
Yeah. You're like exploring the Smithsonian by yourself. But every now and then the tour guide comes in and is like, hey, da 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 da. And then leaves again. You know, like he's just kind of there. And that's not to say that like there aren't some interesting or like dramatic moments between him and Will in their relationship. But ultimately, their relationship. Even Will's like struggle with addiction doesn't feel like it amounts to anything in this series
at all.
He
kicks heroin addiction in like a single episode. Yeah. It's like, that's not how that works. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's, I understand that they're trying to like build Will out as a character and help us understand Will as a character. And I get that like you can have him be an addict and we can see him shoot up in the bathroom in between his toes and, you know, all that kind of stuff, but you don't really need the whole, like, him being an artist and being a druggie and, like, Mercer saying, oh, I thought you quit, and all of that stuff just didn't really feel like it paid dividends in the end. It was just kind of there.
Yeah, I mean, it existed to motivate Will to get into the story, because Will is kind of the person that ends up solving the crime for the police, right? Like, he brings these people together after after Nikki Chaos tries to kill him in front of police. Like, it is in no uncertain terms that he is about to get murdered, like, in the subway. And, like, that is the only other, like, highlight of the show to me, is when this really cool chase scene happens through, like, the streets of New York. Between Will, who is leaving after he accuses Amory of being behind everything. He's kind of like, I know what you did, and I'm gonna figure it out. And then bumps into Nikki Chaos, who's going to case the building that they're looking to blow up, while also bumping into the police officers who are going to question Amory about their involvement in this. And so, like, there's this really kind of nested chase sequences that results in in Will getting tossed overboard after being knocked unconscious off of a ferry. But he survives. And I really thought they were going to kill him off, and I was going to be bummed, and the rest of the show was going to be shit. And then he lives, and I was excited because he actually is motivated to solve the case. He cares about the actors that are involved because it's his family and people that he used to be in the band with. He used to be the leading man of Ex Post Facto, and then they basically ousted him. And so I understand his connection and his reasonings and his desire to help everybody a lot more than I understand anybody else in the whole show.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, his motivation for everything that's happening in the whole series is the only, like, super, super strong, solid one. I mean, there are cases to be made for everyone else as far as, like, why they're doing what they're doing or why they're there. But I agree, Will had the most believability behind,
and he's the best conduit for the narrative. If the show only focused on him, I think the show would be a lot better, because it's a narrower focus towards a person who's sympathetic and working to overcome obstacles, something that we often talk about in our enjoyment of shows.
Yeah. Honestly, I think, which is unfortunate because it feels like he's, like, supposed to be our main character, Charlie just didn't need to be in that show at all.
No, he's really boring.
Because ultimately we see that, like, you know, Charlie defuses a bomb. Great. Someone else could have done that. But, you know, Charlie just didn't really give us much. He just was this kid who, I guess the only reason Charlie exists is so that we can follow him in to see what Nikki Chaos and all the people are doing, like, with the fires and everything. And to expose us to the underground music scene, which we could see that anyway. Yeah, it just felt, it feels a little sad to say, like, oh yeah, the main character just didn't cut him need out of to the be show. In this show, cut him out. It's just weird.
No, and but I think you could probably re-edit this show slightly, where he's still in the show, but he's not the focal point of the character.
Yeah.
And it would be marginally more compelling and less boring in a lot of places. Because, like, so many times the show's focused on him, and he's doing stuff that is fundamentally uninteresting relative to the greater mystery of kind of what's happening. Even in smaller doses, like, I'm more concerned and interested about this weird affair and trying to figure out who's happening and who's exposing Regan and her husband than I am about him cleaning out this abandoned building full of music stuff so that they have a place to build their bomb. Like, one, it has an interesting story to tell, and the other one is boring. And it's pretty obvious which one is to me, right?
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, Will's probably my favorite character.
Yeah, no, he's the best.
I think that,
and he's one of the better actors as well.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think his actor, Nico Tortorella, did a really great job. I mean, I fully believe that he was, like, a musician junkie, like, washed up artist, and
and
got really motivated and decided, like, no, I'm gonna figure this shit out. Like, I actually do care about my family, and I want to, like, help them figure this out, and I'm kind of being pulled into this, and I don't want to be part of it, but I also want to, like, solve it.
Well, I think the other part of it is there's a certain understanding that you have of why he's in the position he's in, unlike a lot of the other characters, right? Like,
yeah,
I can understand, especially once you see some of the flashback scenes of when he was still part of the family, how he's kind of this party boy that him and Regan are like very fuck around and get drunk and party and kind of the trust fund kids.
Oh, yeah.
And how then leaving the family and getting into a band and then becoming an actually pretty famous and prolific artist, but then being ousted from the band. Like, his trajectory makes sense as, like, this is why he became a drug addict. Like, it is a challenging world out there, right? And especially from a guy coming from the privilege that he has, basically being one of the heirs of the city in the kind of context of the narrative, to, you know, essentially a low-life drug addict. Like, that's a trajectory that's interesting to follow. Over another potentially interesting one, but is not played well, is Charlie, who, you know, has his dad killed in this extremely traumatic, socially traumatic event that affected literally every single person that he ever interacts with for the rest of his life.
Yep.
But they don't use it enough or show enough of it for it to be, like, we never see a flashback of him interacting with his dad. We never see any meaningful understanding about why the effects of what's happening to Sam mirror what's going on when he lost his father, which is the point, but it's never shown to it. Like, show, don't tell, right? And they don't even tell us, and they don't show it. And so it's like, I'd rather watch Will, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. Will just had that, Will have that depth and that motivation that just made sense. And he was the only one that was really, you were able to really bond with or, like, yeah, understand. And so, you know, I'm all about that character development. I'm all about the growth and the change we see in characters over a season and over a series. And I feel like Will is the only one we got that with. And Will's the only one we went deep enough with on a backstory to, like, buy into.
Well, he's also one of two characters that we ever see, like, a flashback of.
Right.
And the other one is Sam, who is actively in a coma, and you do not know if she's going to survive.
Yeah, so it's like, well, there's no reason to probably, like, buy into this story enough to where I, like, care, because it's like, well, maybe she's going to die, and then I cared too much about this character, and now I'm like, oh, man, that sucks. I don't know.
I think, like, the kind of maybe resting place that we have in this conversation is that it's just, like, a missed opportunity in a lot of ways more than it is like a failure, because I think, like, failure is maybe a little too harsh for it.
Yeah,
I think, like, obviously this is adapted from a successful book that people enjoyed, and I can't, like, fault, I think that this premise ultimately works better as a book because you have more time and energy to flesh out a lot of these little moments, and you have characters' inner monologues that you can process and kind of learn with them, even if you're jumping around between characters, right? That you can't get in a show. And I'm not going to be that one that's like, oh, the book is always better, because I don't even think that's necessarily true. But I do think, like, this show's structure, the narrative structure, begets a book much better than it translates to the television.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I think the missing inner monologue that we probably have in the book,
of at least even just Charlie, right? Like,
of at least just Charlie, it leaves us with so much missing context and so much missing motivation for everyone that I think that that's why we're both sitting here going, like, the only person I really felt like I understood or knew anything about was Will.
Which is true.
It's true.
I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It's not even, like, disappointing, because I didn't have high hopes for the show, but it does suck when you kind of, the first episode is at the bare minimum intriguing. It's not like a snooze fest. It's not super boring, but it doesn't get its claws in me. It's not like I need to watch the next episode. And so it turned into a slog, unfortunately, because it doesn't do the right kinds of things it needs to compel you to keep watching, especially, like, the third episode. Like, I would challenge anyone who's watched the show to tell me what happens in episode 3 or 4. Like, I don't know. And so I can't even verify, but, like, I can tell you one thing that happens in episode 5, like, and that's Will being almost killed by these people chasing him, right? Like, because that's an interesting moment in the sea of kind of mundane and boring.
100%.
And you could even cut, like, this could have been a movie a lot more easily than I think it could have been a book, because if you condense it even further down to the more pivotal, important story elements and turn it into a good 2-hour drama, it's going to end up being more impactful than the 8-hour drama that we watched or the 500 whatever page book that we read. Like, it's in the middle and it's too long to be interesting, but not short enough. Like, it's, I hope that 100%. I'm making sense, right?
No, 100% making sense. I agree. I think it's a good story, but it was dragged out a little too long. And I think that it's that we suffered for that. The whole show made me feel meh. Like, just like you, it was like the first episode was interesting because we kind of built everything, right?
Yeah.
It built Sam and Charlie's relationship. We set a foundation for what we're gonna experience, and we see, you know, Sam, or we hear Sam getting shot. Mercer finds her. Like, that all really is. Honestly, it was a bit gripping. Like, I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting. Like, I'm really curious to know how all these people are involved or how all of this really works. And then pretty quickly it was like, oh, okay, I can, like, you know, I see what's coming, and I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I know exactly kind of what's going to happen here. And then it's just a slog, like you said. It just becomes a meh, and it's like, you know, I guess I'm not surprised why this didn't get a second season.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me at all. Not to mention, and I think, you know, it dovetails nicely into our normal conversation, but like, what would you even do? Like, what, not knowing the content of the novel, where do you go from here?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, and I was actually thinking about this a little bit earlier today. Is like, I don't know where the book ends up and where we left off, right? Like, I don't know if there's more to the story. I feel like there's probably not, but
we're left on a lot of cliffhangers because Amory Gould gets away, right?
Yeah, he's in a
grievous car accident, but like walks away just fine, miraculously.
Yeah.
And then
Nikki and the boys ran away. Nikki, Sol, and I don't even know if they ever said his name. The other guy that's with them.
Yeah, the
guy.
He does also murder a dude. Like, he's not inconsequential to the story, but I agree.
He murders Will's friend, who, by the way, was the leader of the special agent group we followed in The Rookie Feds.
Yeah, I was thinking he's one of our connective tissues of
he's one of our connective
shows
tissues
that we watch
in the series.
It's very interesting. I just Googled right now while we're talking City on Fire because I was looking for the book, like the Wikipedia of the book, so I could read like where the plot ends in that book, just like while you were talking. And I'm just scrolling through, just trying to, because it's all showing the like Amazon listing for the book and IMDb and all that, right? And then I get to the bottom of the first Google page, and it's, I've never heard of this article, so don't trust it, but it's Pace Magazine, and the quote, the pull quote is, Apple TV's City on Fire is an absolute mess. And then this is just I didn't even click in it, but it's the article, like the headline of the article is, City on Fire's hollow artistry and soulless execution cements it as nothing more than a waste of time and a major letdown for Apple TV Plus.
Fuck, dude, people are out there reviewing like harsh.
Yeah, and I don't even want to necessarily be as harsh as that is, because I don't think it was like, I think there's some mess to it, but I don't think it's a total, like saying it's a total mess is maybe average too far.
It wasn't the worst thing I've watched on television. They're making it kind of seem like it was the biggest waste of their time ever. So season two, I think obviously there's going to be some kind of chase to find Amory. You know, we see Bill, Mercer, and Will all kind of like agree to team up to go get Amory and, you know, bring him to justice, so to speak. I think you're going to see, also, by the way, Charlie is Regan's daughter from when she was essayed. So there you go. There's going to be something that happens with that.
Wait, I'm confused.
Did you miss that?
Yeah, what? Hold on, back up.
Yeah, so when Regan was essayed, she became pregnant.
Yep.
She, quote-unquote, went to Italy, which was actually her just being put in a nunnery, having a kid, and then she would get away for adoption. The Warsbergers, or Warsbargers, or whatever, are the people who adopted the baby. So Charlie is Regan's son. We see that in the adoption paperwork at the end of the series.
Damn.
She opens up the paperwork and it says his parents, Charlie's parents' names. So
I didn't pick up on that. So good on you for cat. And normally I'm the one that catches that shit. Good.
Yes.
Nice job, Andrew.
Thank you. I was so invested in the show. No, I just, that was
no,
obvious.
No, I'm impressed. That's cool.
It was obvious. Like the moment that we found out that she was pregnant after that, I was like, it's Charlie. It's just one of those other things, like, it's Charlie. Charlie was a baby. Charlie was a baby. Charlie was. Wow. Charlie again, was her baby.
Beating my powers of prediction. I didn't get any of that. Yeah, I'm reading about the minor aside. Reading the Wikipedia page for the novel.
Okay.
And apparently it's quite different.
I got that impression.
Yeah, the novel was released in 2015, but it takes place in the 1970s. It is not about post 9/11 New York. Yep. And it is considered one of the like kind of modern classics. Oh. Quote from the Wikipedia article, from a Vogue article. The king of exuberant, zeitgeisty New York novels like The Bonfire of the Vanities or The Goldfinch, two other very acclaimed books that you either love, hate, or pretend to have read. Stephen King tweeted about the novel, calling it, quote, massively entertaining and, quote, as close to the great American novel as the century has produced.
Holy shit.
So clearly plenty of meat on the proverbial bones of the book, but seemingly a divergence in terms of what the story was about, since none of this takes place in the 1970s and it's fundamentally different. So, but
there is a blackout.
Yeah. But that also happened. But I mean, like City on Fire, like this is the summary. It's two sentences. City on Fire follows the investigation of a Central Park shooting that took place in New Year's Eve during the 1970s. And that's literally the only like synopsis it gives about the book in terms of Wikipedia, which is like, yeah, I guess if you took that one polka, it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, but it's the same
other
show.
Than that, there's seemingly very little connective tissue.
Yeah, I got that same impression when I was looking up the show for writing the synopsis. I saw that the book had a few different elements, characters, things like that. And so I was like, oh, this is not a direct adaptation. This is a loose
reimagining,
nod and reimagining to the book. Without having read the book, can't tell you if it's like very similar, very not similar, or similar. At least the setting and some of the main circumstances are the same. But I don't know. Back to my season two.
Yeah. Sorry, not to interrupt. You know, but I thought it was important. You're fine. To talk about
you're good. You know, Will, Bill, and Mercer gonna go get Amory and bring him to justice, just to reiterate that. Regan, or Charlie, is Regan's daughter, son. It's been a long week. It's Monday. Charlie is Regan's son. I don't know how that's gonna even factor in, if at all. I think it's just something that we're supposed to just chew on. I think we see Regan and Will kind of rebuilding their relationship, as well as Regan and Keith, the guy who cheated on her husband
that she's in the process of divorcing.
Right. Cheated on her with Sam. I think we see kind of their relationship change or rebuild.
Yeah, they have a reconciliatory moment at the end of the final episode.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what, you know, obviously Sam and Charlie may have some moments where they get to share like how they actually feel about each other and kind of everything that's happening. Cause I'm sure like Charlie has a lot to fill Sam in on, especially when it comes to like her friends in the band and all that kind of stuff. But the thing that I fail to see for a season two is what is the event that's going to happen that brings us back.
Right.
Because the entire idea. Yeah. The inciting incident was Sam getting shot in Central Park. That's the whole reason we're here. That's the whole reason any of this happened. That already happened. She didn't die. They know who did it and they caught them, or they didn't catch them. Excuse me. So maybe it's a chase for them. That's kind of weak. That's the thing I'm having a hard time filling in for as a season two, is like, why am I coming back to this? And ultimately, my guess is that's part of the reason why it was canceled, is because there's
nothing
to come back
to. Yeah, it feels like it should
have
been, like, I think about if we even parallel it to other shows on the same streaming platform of Apple TV Plus, right? There's a show, great show, I would recommend watching called Defending Jacob, which is a short. It is a limited series because they just adapted the one novel, because there's only the one novel, and it's a really strong, I think it's 8 episodes, might be even 6, adaptation. And it is a great story and it's a really interesting story. I don't think that this is as good as that show is, but it speaks to you can have really good limited series and not have them be needing to be returned to, right? Like, it's okay to just tell the story that was presented to you and then move on. And I don't think, like, I think they were setting up for a potential another season, even if I agree with you. I don't know what the next inciting incident would be. I don't even know, you know, you could have something that brings some of these people back together and then you kind of cut out some of the cruft and include other people that we have yet to meet. You know, you kind of trade out some of the band-related folks for some new kind of threat to, I don't know, Charlie again, right? Or I don't even know, right? But the fact that it was setting up for a potential another season is part of the downfall. And if they just wrapped it up, 100%. Like I'm sure the novel does, then you don't need to worry about it. And you can just, even if it was slated for another season, you can just kind of retitle it as a limited series and move past it, right? I even think about like Ted Lasso, again, another Apple TV Plus show where they keep saying that the end of season three is a season finale, not a series finale, but everybody in the production has said like they're not making more of the show. There's spinoff shows in the works, but like they have all said like, no, we're done. Like, but even the people running behind the scenes won't kind of admit that it's over. And I feel like this could have been a helpful version of that where it's like, okay, it was a limited series. Surprise.
Yeah, for sure. It's actually funny you mentioned like the limited series thing. I think so Leanne and I watched I think the first two episodes together, and one of the first things she said was like, this is like a limited series. It's written and it feels like a limited series, and I agree with that.
Yeah, but I confirmed that it was like fully canceled.
Oh yeah,
it wasn't,
no, yeah. No, 100%. I did too. But
we do our homework here in season one.
Yeah, of course. Not a single show ends up on the list without having officially been canceled, and that's our season one pod guarantee,
unless they randomly bring it back for some reason.
Unless,
but even
they
though
randomly
pretty...
bring it back and we eat our words, but
it has yet to happen. In 40, this is our 42nd episode and we have not had a show reemerge. Have we even had any spinoffs? No, I don't think so. Rookie Fed was a spinoff and it was canceled, but like I think about a future potential we will certainly talk about is Firefly. Like Firefly has a spinoff film related to it that kind of closes up the series, but I don't, that's not like another season, right? Like it's fundamentally a very different thing to have a movie over a show. So
totally.
I mean, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, I mean, did you have any thoughts more on like a season two? Or
I think that you could cut out, like I said, I would cut out some of the characters and turn it more into having an element of grunge to the like upper class New York, right? So you can keep like the Regan family kind of drama stuff going on.
Yeah.
And maybe Regan has to take over after the death of her father because she's the only one participant in that, where Will is on his own. And the two of them are kind of trying to piece together some mystery related to the death of his father as it relates to maybe some other underground goings on within the New York zeitgeist universe, as we've
underground
kind of said.
Rap scene now.
Yeah, whatever. You know, who knows, right? It doesn't even need to necessarily be nefarious, but still like connected. Like he's being extorted, right? Or something like that. Or he has a mistress that is connected to them in some weird way that, you know, is Sam's mom who is dead, right? Like something, you know, you can connect it back in weird ways, just in the same way that you connected that Charlie was Regan's son. You can even play with that, where he is a potential heir to this massive throne because he is the eldest legally of her three children now instead of two. So like, I guess there are threads, right? But they're not necessarily any more or less compelling than the rest of the show. And I think you and I both agree that this is a high star rating. Like we haven't gotten there yet, but like, I don't know. I don't feel the need to continue any of these stories because I wasn't particularly compelled by any of these stories.
Yeah, same. No, I don't think I feel the need to. I'm certainly not wanting for more of this series.
Yeah, it's not. It's nowhere is it a show that is. It's just not high on my list. You know, I would take either. I would say a good five other shows that we've reviewed already that I would rather have another season before this.
100%.
Well, are we at? I think we're at our star rating.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I think that takes us toward our ratings. Presley, if you wouldn't mind, can you recap the ratings, and then after a short drum roll, we'll hear what you have to say on the official ratings board.
For new listeners, ratings start from 0 to 5. 0 is should never have been a concept for anyone ever. Shouldn't have even been a novel to then be adapted into a TV show. 1 star is I saw the pilot and it was trash and I don't want to see any more of it. And it shouldn't have been made into a show. Two stars is we got a season and it wasn't great and it was justifiably canceled. And I think we're fine with that.
Yeah.
Three stars is the tentative yes, tentative no. You know, if you liked our conversation, if you like the concepts that we discussed, even if we weren't crazy about it, maybe it's something that you would really enjoy, go for it. But kind of, we call it the watch at your own risk, where we don't really know which way it might swing. Four stars is this was a good show and we wanted more of it. And we are disappointed that there is not more of it because it has enough hooks. It has enough story. It has enough whatever to make us sad that there is another season. And fives are the certified greats, the shows that are cultural icons that everyone should partake in and enjoy and realize are important to somebody out there.
Certified fresh.
Certified fresh, even though we don't like Rotten Tomatoes. But I guess now, drum roll. I'm going to cut that. Drum roll.
That's my fault. I actually did a drum roll.
Andrew scared and the dogs.
The dogs don't like
Nelly in his face. Yeah. Anyway, drum roll for this is a one.
Yeah.
I was just so bored, man. That's like the biggest problem is like boredom, right? Like when I can't even be like, I thought I was going to bang out the show in like 3 days because it's only 8 episodes and it took me like nearly the whole 2 weeks to watch everything. Wow. Like I finished it long before you did, but like,
it
was a slog to get through 8 episodes and anything that's 8 episodes that feels like a slog is not worthy of even a 2 or a 3. Yeah. So I can't in good conscience give it anything but a one. What about you?
I would also give it a one. It did feel like a slog and I think I watched 1.5 episodes at night one night and then I watched the rest of this series the next day.
You're like,
because
I need
just
to get
wanted to
this.
Be done.
Yeah.
And we were already like late to record and I was like, Andrew, dude, you just gotta get this shit done. So I just hunkered down and I watched the whole thing and man, was I not better off for it. This is a one.
Yep. There it is. Whoop, there
textbook
it is.
Textbook one.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel bad about it because like there are plenty of great shows out there and plenty of even on this streaming service on others, right? Like that. You know, we reviewed plenty of better shows with better premises. And so it's just like, you know, it's just like it wasn't very much like the headline we read. It just is kind of a mess and it's 100%. Disappointing more than anything else because you want compelling TV. I want to give fives. I want to find the fours, right? Like you and I thirst for them and that is the whole point of this show. Correct. And so to watch something, I was like, well, this is, you know, the book's really acclaimed and I know it was canceled, but you never know because there have been shows that have been canceled that are trash, but that are great and vice versa, right? And even guilty pleasure shows like an Alcatraz, like a Pan Am, where like they're not necessarily great, but I still can roll with them and have fun. Like this didn't even have that. So
100%.
Andrew, I think we've talked to death. I would love for you to tell our listeners all about our social media and where they can find us so I can go to sleep.
You can find us on the line. We are on the internet.
Wonderful.
No, you can find us at season_1_pod on all socials. We have a subreddit, r/season1pod, as well as our website, www.season1pod.com. Again, that was www.season1pod.com.
I was continuing to work on designs with Andrew. Yeah. We brainstormed a little bit, so I have some better ideas. I'm sorry I'm very slow about it. Life, as Andrew said at the start when he was apologizing, gets messy and in the way a lot of times, and I just haven't put in the time for it. But I do want to get some new designs for our store because I think it'll be fun. And we have merch and stuff like that. Last thing, we don't always ask it, but I do implore you to like and comment and rate or whatever the hell you can do on any of the platform that you're listening on, since podcasts are everywhere, just because it does help spread the show. Andrew and I, literally, when we released our last episode, went through it together and like made sure that we were up to date on everything that was going on. We like went through all of our emails and read all the comments and looked at all the star ratings and we care and we pay attention to that stuff. So it's really meaningful if you take 2 minutes even to do that for us. So thank you.
Indeed. Contact at season1pod.com.
Emails, questions, whatever, comments, concerns.
Questions or shows that we should do or anything.
Andrew, I'm not gonna have you do another drum roll because you scared your dogs. Okay, so don't do that. But are you ready and excited for the next show that we're gonna watch?
I am ready and a word between excited and incredibly apprehensive. I'm great. In the middle of that.
That's where we live at season one.
And that's
our comfort zone.
What we have learned to expect from our scars. Yeah.
Okay, so the next show we are watching is called Renegade Nell.
Renegade Nell. Oh, this is a Disney Plus series.
It is a Disney Plus series.
Okay.
Starring one of the
chicks from Dairy Girls. That
is in Dairy Girls.
Correct. Yeah.
It was canceled literally the week before we recorded this. It was canceled on like last Friday. So
oh,
it was
wow.
very fresh off the press's cancellation. And I had already started watching it when I literally had started watching it last week. And then it was canceled the week I started watching it.
No
I might
way.
Be cursed. And that's a conversation for another time. But I was like, what better time to review a show that I was already starting to watch than on the podcast where we watch canceled shows?
Well, here we go.
Am I cursed? Should we talk about this?
Presley, you're cursed, but it's for so many other reasons.
Well, good to know, I suppose. I think we done did it again. Another one in the books. Andrew, thank you so much for going on this horrible journey with us. And hopefully this next one.
You.
I'm on a heater right now, so maybe this will be a good one again.
You know, I hope so.
The last two I picked were certified fresh. God, we can't use that. It's definitely copywritten.
I know.
But anyway, until next time, my name is Presley.
My name is Andrew. Just read the book. Just read the book.
Yeah. We don't just, usually
just
say
read
that,
the book.
Just read the
it's
book.
Probably better. Yeah. Just read the book. It's probably better. All right. Love you guys. Bye.